A little idle chatter about the people that we know. And though it doesn't matter, is there a different way of saying hello?
You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe to this podcast, visit www.questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes Store.
Please note, the recording of our guest, Yuri Yamamoto, includes popping noises at the beginning of the episode. We apologize for the poor sound quality. The recording improves after about 20 minutes.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to The View. Beautiful Thursday morning. I'm Michael Tino, joining you from Peekskill, New York.
And hello, everyone. This is Terry Bernor in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm doing dual duty today. I get to join Michael on the hosting crew, so you're going to see me not hiding behind the chalice today. I will do my best to do a little bit of live tweeting as well, and I hope that you will add your voice to the conversation at CLFUU is our Twitter handle, and the hashtag TheView, V-U-U.
Now, we look forward to viewer questions and comments as we go on. We have a really exciting show for you today. Today we have three guests joining us. We have Yuri Yamamoto. Yuri is joining us from Raleigh, North Carolina, where she serves as the music director at the UU Fellowship of Raleigh. And Chandra Snell joining us from Tallahassee, Florida. Chandra is the co-director of the Wesley Foundation at Florida A&M University. And Yuri and Chandra are the co-editors of a brand new book called Unitarian Universalists of Color, Stories of Struggle, Courage, Love, and Faith. And also joining us is Mike Jenkins, who is one of the contributors to that book. And so we look forward to hearing from all of them. So Yuri and Chandra, let's start it with you. And if you could tell us a little bit about this book and how it came to be, I'd love to hear some of the history.
There's another co-editor, Tim Hanami, and he may be watching today. There is a group, the online group for the people of color of UUs that Jessica York has set up some years ago. And at the end of 2013, there had been a lot of buzz about how things are now working out for us in our respective congregations. And Tim just wrote and says, hey, we should make a book. Or write the book. And there are several people who got interested, but by, you know, after a while, only remaining three were Chandra, Tim, and I. And at that time, Skinner House had a call out for multiculturalism books. So Chandra wrote a nice query and submitted to the Skinner House, and we had a conversation with Skinner House for about a year about the project, and eventually project was rejected by the Skinner House, and we'll get into that story later. So anyway, so when we were rejected, I sort of agreed with the assessment that we, the editors, are incapable of doing this project. But that made me very, very angry based on some of the things that were said in the conversation. And I wrote my rant, which I will reveal today. That has been secret for a long time. That energy, I really get really angry unless it's about my family. But that energy really propelled me to go into really make this project happen. And I like to really also talk about how primarily I spoke with the potential contributors and how their stories came unfolding. And then we also did the GA workshop in Portland in 2015 with Reverend Jennifer Kwong, Sunshine Wolf, and Carlton Smith as the workshop panelists. And there were so many amazingly powerful things said by those three ministers. So the transcript is also in the book. And all along this, we did Faithify campaigns to fund this project. So I'm so excited and thankful to all the people who contributed to this project. And I hope they are thrilled to read the stories. There are some very difficult stories in there, but that's basically in a nutshell.
I just want to just give Yuri kudos because she has really been instrumental in this whole project. I mean, from its initial concept on through, you know, just really being the, although of course we were co-editors, she really was the lead editor. She might not admit that, but she really, really took the lead and just kind of shepherded us throughout this whole thing. And really and truly, had it not been for her, you know, this project might not have come about. So I do want to give her that praise, but I think the book will be just an alternative voice to what's out there. And of course, now in the UU Church, some other issues or, well, it's really the same issue, you know, it's coming to the fore now with, you know, the controversy in leadership. So I think we're at a good time now to just deepen the conversation about, you know, what we can do better, you know, how we can just, you know, break down the walls that divide us. I think we're at a very pivotal moment nationwide, you know, worldwide. And I think because of us being UUs, we're in a unique position. You know, sometimes it's, you know, it's good to have good intentions, which I think probably most people do, you know, within the UU Church. But then the challenge is, okay, how do we actualize our good intentions? And, you know, that's where the problems come about oftentimes. So I'm hoping that this project can be an instrument in helping to bring about some much needed conversations and some much needed, I don't know, examinations, changes in how we do things, et cetera, et cetera.
And Mike, you're joining us as a contributor to this project. Can you tell us a little bit about why you signed on and what you contributed to this book?
Okay, well, let me start saying my part in the book came from just me learning what UU was and wanting to really just step in and with both feet and blazing and try to, you know, do as much as I could possible with UUFR especially. And was approached by Yuri if I had any stories about being a UU of color. And of course, me wanting to get involved in everything, maybe kind of a yes man with everything. I definitely wanted to be a part of that. Also, you know, me as a spoken word poet and a musician as well. So I've connected a lot with Yuri being a music director at UUFR. So that just spoke to me in so many different ways. The story that I have contributed to the book is, the title is What Up, the Triumphant Story. Triumphant is my poetic alias, my musician's name. And it pretty much just talks about a different view of being a UU of color, being a person that wants to deal more on the human aspect of it and not necessarily saying that I am a Black UU or that other people are white UUs. That we are all human UUs. So I had, you know, with that story in the years of being at UUFR especially, I've been met with a lot of different challenges as far as getting people to accept that we are all human beings and not necessarily defined by a color. And I hope that that the story that I have inside of there will kind of shed some light on that, because I think that's something that really doesn't get the type of attention that I believe it should.
Well, I just wanted to second what was said. You know, I think in our country especially, you know, we're so defined by the externals. And we concentrate on what divides us instead of what unites us. For some reason, I think it's, well, not for know the reasons, but it's so ingrained, I think, within the psyche of this country that it's a very difficult thing to overcome. You know, seeing someone is oh, you know, that's a white man, or, you know, that's a black woman. Well, that's a human being. And, you know, years ago, I read The Seat of the Soul by Gary Zukav. Maybe see, yeah. And that just really changed me in such a fundamental way, because, you know, I realized, you know, okay, well, he points it out in the book. Great book, by the way, if you haven't read it. You know, these are our earth suits. These are our earth suits. And we as human beings get caught up in the earth suits. Well, all the earth suit is the clothing for your soul. It's the clothing for your soul. Our soul is what's going to remain behind after our physical bodies depart. The soul is what ultimately defines us. That's the essence of who we are, not the earth suit. You know, that's a shedding. That's something we're going to shed one day. But unfortunately, we as human beings, we concentrate on the earth suit. And what I've tried to do really ever since I read that book in the early 2000s is look at people from a soul level. And, you know, I think that, again, you use are in a unique position to do that, probably more so than any of the other mainline, quote unquote, if you will, denominations, because of, you know, the unique heritage of UUs. And, you know, maybe the UU church is going to have to lead the other churches in this. You know, as much room for growth as there is in the UU church, there's probably even more room for growth in the other denominations. So I think that this is a unique opportunity. How can we go about looking at one another from a soul level? And you might say that those things are diametrically opposed. You know, how do we fight for justice, you know, of people of color, you know, women of all colors, you know, and other oppressed groups, if we don't look at the outside, because that's the source of, you know, that's the reason they're oppressed. Well, I don't know. That's something I'm still trying to figure out myself. But yeah, I think that those are some very good points, and I just wanted to second them.
I have a slightly different take on this. Mike and I have gone around and around and around, and we know we don't necessarily see the things in the same way, but that's the whole point, right? UUs tend to, well, I feel, I could be wrong. Now, are you hearing the noise? I know there's a lawnmower outside. Do you hear it? Okay, so I'm going to continue. So I just want to read a little bit from our preface, because in this book, you will meet 15 Unitarian Universalists of color who come from all walks of life, live in different parts of the United States, and are uniquely talented and beautiful. As such, each story is written in each writer's authentic style. Some of us have known Unitarian Universalism for decades, and some of us have discovered this faith recently. Some of us love our congregations. Some of us have conflicting feelings. Some of us do not belong to any congregation at this time. Some of us play leadership roles, and some of us feel invisible. We are proud to be unique individuals of color. Even though we share some experiences and traits with each other, we don't want to be defined only by the color of our skin. We present these stories to initiate more conversations because Unitarian Universalism is our chosen faith, but the Unitarian Universalist community has not always been welcome to people who look like us. Sometimes I also say, you know, they're definitely shared experiences of being an Asian American, but so I like people to recognize that. And at the same time, I don't want to be just seen as Asian American or everything Japanese. So it's complex, and then people approach from different approach in different ways.
So Yuri, when you and Chandra and the other editor were looking at the stories that were submitted, was there some sort of theme that kind of stretched across even these unique stories, or kind of what went into how you were envisioning this as an anthology of stories? Is there a certain direction that you were wanting to make sure that there was representation across the board, or kind of what went into your role as editors when you were envisioning how this whole book and collection might come together?
In the very beginning, we decided the authenticity was the theme. And so I can get into a little bit of our conversation with Skinner House. Was the originally they said each contribution should be about 4,000 words essay. So my immediate reaction was, well, who's going to write that? And who's going to read that? It's going to definitely limit. I mean, we are talking about multiculturalism, but we're trying to put that into a box. And of course, I ended up in writing my essays longer than 4,000 words, I think. So I hope some people will be willing to read it. But, you know, you're already limiting your writership and the readership, seriously. So initially we said, no, we're going to have a DVD, and then people may be dancing or preaching or singing in addition to stories. And then they said, okay, it doesn't have to be 4,000 words essays, but we're not going to do the DVD. And I understand that. But at this point, we want to move forward with a story project online where people can actually contribute any kind of media that can be put online. So I think that's where, I mean, not everybody wants to write. So for me, initially we envisioned people who, initially envisioned three sections. One is why we came to, or how we came to UU. And then next was how we love UU Church. And then the third one was what the problems we experience in our UU Church. But it really didn't come out like that. We were just thinking in abstract at that time. So I think almost everybody wrote something about why they came to UU, which I think is very important. Because, I mean, if we just only whine about what's wrong with this, then why are we here? We want our stories to be heard, and the part of the important story is our faith journey. Why we are here, well, how we got here. Because there's too much, you know, Black people like this and white people like this and this stereotyping going on. Perhaps not so much for white people, just because there are many of them and their stories are shared among themselves. But I think, it turned out sometimes I would interview a potential contributor for hours, and they may start as, well, I already left my church, but not much to talk about it. And then 3 hours later, all these experiences come out. And then I would type them up and says, here's the summary of our conversation. And then can you start from here? And then that gives them the courage to actually tell the story that they'd rather not to think about. But some people like Mike, who already wanted to share stories, and he got so excited that there was a platform. And there are many others who said they wanted to contribute, and after a repeated conversation, they just did not have time to do it. And there was one person who actually contributed, and she did not want me to touch any of it. Sometimes I would ask some questions, clarifying questions, and sometimes she and I will have arguments. But good thing, because I don't understand stories of every other person of color or any person. So, and she ended up in not contributing, which, I mean, I loved her story, but, you know, we have to respect their decisions. And there were two people who decided to remain anonymous. And I respect their decisions. They were so afraid that they were going to lose their church, the only church that they felt made sense to them, even though it was painful experience in the churches. I think it just unfolded as opposed to, I mean, we had a plan, and it doesn't look anything like how we planned.
Chandra, how about for you? What would you add as your thoughts?
I would definitely echo all of what Yuri said, but particularly her last comment in that, you know, the process of it has been a little different from, you know, what we initially anticipated, but I think in a very good way. And I think that's probably a metaphor for life. You know, it's good to have a plan, and plans are necessary. But at the same time, just being open to what actually happens. You know, sometimes the universe goes, okay, that's a good plan, but now let me tell you what's going to happen. You know, so I think this process for all of us has been a faith walk. You know, just believing in the project and, you know, seeing it through to completion, which we're almost there, yay. And it's like giving birth, you know, it's like you start off with, you know, this initial thought, and then it just grows and grows and blossoms, and you nurture it over time. And one day you look up and it's asking for the car keys. So there you have it.
Oh, Chandra, maybe you didn't get this yet, but I made the book available today. This morning, I wanted the viewer to be able to buy the book. So I got all the things done, and the ebook, and today only discount and whatnot. So we definitely need to talk about that too. Okay. So we are done. As of this morning.
So we're not waiting for the hard copy to come.
Oh, no. Somebody already bought the book online.
Oh, you know, our first buyer, we need to make note of them.
Well, I'm not sure who beat what, but I just saw a post on Facebook that person that I don't know already bought the book. So I thought, yay. Yep. Awesome. Yeah. It is available.
That is exciting news.
So UU of colorsstoryproject.com. You can see this beautiful artwork that's on the cover, and I'm hoping that our editors can talk about that artwork and who the artist is and how that came about. But right there on the page is links to Lulu. So you can order a soft cover book or a ebook, and you can get the table of contents and more information about the book. Yuri, why don't you tell, or whoever, how I want to hear about this artist, because I used that image in the promotion of this View episode, and I would love to hear more about how that came about.
Yes, so Yun Suhu is a member of our congregation. So she became an artist in about the last several years through her fight with her breast cancer. And it was a healing process for her. This she shared with our congregation in the service, so I think it's okay to share. And this particular painting is actually a red ribbon yoga that she participated and taught some paintings. And she took a picture of all these women at the beach, and then she created the painting. But she literally has hundreds of beautiful paintings. One day I went to her house, we went through practically everything, and I picked about 10 that I liked. And I kept coming back to this image because it is so beautiful and so hopeful, and people holding hands and all colors of people, you know, people of all colors. And that's what I want. You know, as much as I get mad sometimes, this is the image that comes to me is what the beloved community should look like. So I talked to her, and she said, sure, Yuri, you can use this. So I'm really thankful for her to allow us to use this. And she's originally from China, if that's important to some people. I know some you use always like, Suhu, what that name means. Where are they from? You know, I wonder if I can tell this person from Japanese to Korean to Chinese. So.
Well, we thank her for sharing her beautiful art. The first I've seen that artwork, it really is beautiful. So before we ask you to share a little more about this story, viewer Sonia Sikalski is impressed by your dedication to this project. I have to say, I think we all are pretty impressed with the dedication to the project. I want to hear some of the stories in the book. And since Mike is here, I've asked if he might share an excerpt from the story he shared in the book. Would that be okay with you, Mike?
Oh, yes, indeed. I'll share a part that comes from the triumphant story. A little small paragraph here. And it goes back on the conversation that me and Shana were having about the human suit and the soul. So this is kind of the way I explain myself as a person who does not identify as a Black UU or as but also just a human, a UU of a color. So it goes, the best possible way I can explain myself is to do so in this fashion. Me being Black is the same to me as being a boy or a girl to a transgender being. I and my wife do not place ourselves in that category at all. And it's quite frustrating when anyone does so. Our shared belief is simple. We are all people of color, no Black or white here. My shirt is Black. These words are not. The words are Black on white paper. The way I live my life isn't. My skin color isn't. The way I talk isn't. The way I walk isn't. Yet people inherently categorize people as either Black or white. They don't even think about it. That's separatism, point blank period. And I hate being separated. You know, if you think about it, on a scientific level, when it comes to vision, like we only see a certain amount of detail as far as color. But if we were to think about, say, certain insects, they see about four to five times the amount of definition and graphics and color as we do as human beings. So it's almost like they see rainbows all around them. There is no single flat matte Black or bone white color. And I try my best to do that on a daily basis to see not color blind, but color brilliant, that everyone has all of the colors within them.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Mike. I appreciate it. And I appreciate that you have a perspective that might be different from some of the other perspectives in the book, and certainly of folks that we've talked to on The View, and folks that I know. And I appreciate that the editors of this book were so dedicated to keeping people's authentic voices represented that you really seem to want a great diversity of voices presented just as they are, which is really beautiful to me. Yuri?
I just want to say that, you know, initially when Mike was talking about this, his idea of color, I struggled with that a lot. Because to me, whatever we claim, that's not how people see us, right? So there is that. But I came to accept it that when it comes from a person of color, because I also want to be seen as a human being, not an Asian woman or whatever the label you want to put on me. Because if we can start from there, then of course, Asian woman is a part of my identity. Asian American is my identity, but that's not everything about me that comes with some stereotypes and baggage in somebody else's mind. But my concern is that when a white UUs especially express that, they erase it. So I thought the Mike actually said something brilliant, color brilliant, rather than being colorblind, because the reality of shared experiences are there, and I don't want white people to come to me and say, I don't see you as a person of color, and you're okay. I'm like, you know, some other person of color. So I think it's in a context how it's said. I think that I came to understand, because Mike had shared with me many experiences that oftentimes other Black people have told me. He experiences that and he knows it. But, you know, so it's not like he's saying, like, we are all human. Why can't we just say that and then forget about all the injustices? That's not what he's saying. So, I mean, that's my take. I mean, maybe that's what he's saying, but that's how I understand. And I agree with that. I mean, I like to be seen as a human being too.
You know, I think at the end of the day, that's what we all want. You know, we each of us want to be recognized in our full humanity. You know, first of all, we're human beings, anything else is secondary. And the meaning of gender or the meaning of color, you know what? It only means what we want it to mean, you know, as a society. And if as individuals, these externally imposed definitions conflict with our self-definition, then that's when we as people of color, or, you know, as gay people, or, you know, transgender people, or whatever the case may be, it's so important to define yourself for yourself. Don't let those definitions be imposed upon you, even by those who may be well-meaning. I get to decide. I get to decide. But unfortunately, we're not there yet, as we all know. And it seems that we're in a period of retrenchment. And I was talking to Yuri and Tim, the other editor, the other day. I think it was an email exchange. And, you know, we were talking about how it seems, and, you know, we did not plan this, but it seems that the book is coming out at a pivotal moment in our country's history, lo and behold. So these conversations are needed more than ever. You know, there's just so much in our world that stems from us, so many injustices that stem from us not fully recognizing one another's humanity. You know, whether it's police violence against people of color, you know, mass incarceration, you know, demonizing Islam, you know, closing borders. You know, we do seem to have an administration that embodies white supremacy. You know, and so, you know, they're not saying that, but if you look at their actions, it's so important. And, you know, as individual people, we may look at these things going on in the larger world and we might say to ourselves, what can I do? You know, I'm just one little person. But you know what? We all have a sphere of influence, personal influence. And that may be, you know, your job, your neighborhood, the person you encounter in the grocery store, you know, your congregation. But we all have a sphere of influence in which we can make a difference. And, you know, that really, I think, is an opportunity for this book. You know, we're hoping that, you know, some non-people of color will read it, you know, and maybe, you know, it can open their eyes in ways that they can expand their worldview. They can expand perhaps how they've been seeing things. And, you know, it's hard when you have been, and this applies to all of us, it's hard when you're in a particular society to step out of that society and look objectively at it. You know, warts and all, what's really going on here? Because at the same, you know, even though we may critique our society, at the same time, we're products of our society by and large. So therein you have the challenge, but I think it can be done if people are thoughtful and intentional about it. And again, you know, we're really hoping that this book can play a role in that process.
I just want to continue with that because, and I want to share something that had been hidden for a long time, and which is my rant. And when we were rejected by the Skinner House, even though in the conversation I was like, oh yeah, 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 right, right, yeah, we understand. Yeah, and in the end, I realized they were right in some way that we really didn't know what we were doing. So they were right that we couldn't do it at the time. But and the rant, I just started sharing this, but I was, the reason I want to share this is I was not able to, I just couldn't make myself put that into the book because it was so raw and so harsh. And my image of me as a very nice Asian girl wouldn't let me do this. And I do, I must admit that I do have internalized white supremacy, which actually is reflected in this book, unfortunately. One is to avoid something that is so harsh, like what I'm going to read to you now. But also in the workshop transcript, I am recorded by saying that let's assume good intentions with each other. And guess what happened in the workshop? Later, I found out that there were so many microaggressions that the people of color who came to the workshop were hurt. Today, I would never say assume good intentions without saying, but impacts are real. You need to apologize for the impact. And I wish that I could just add into that, but I didn't say it. So I thought, okay, let's just put that on record. That's where I was in 2015. But here's my rant. So you wish someone would be brave enough to tell you what is wrong with you and your fellow Unitarian Universalists, so that you can quickly fix your problems and move on to do what you love to do, to fix other people. You want to read painful stories on your cozy, comfortable couch in the safety of your home, where you can always throw this book on the floor and say that this is just a rant of some crazy woman, or her English is too poor for a good read. She doesn't know how to rhyme. You want us to risk our jobs and our relationships and our spiritual home so that you can perhaps learn something new. That's called privilege. I'd rather share my story as part of my faith journey with love, because to me, love is what Unitarian Universalism is all about. I think love will win, and you will embrace me as a fellow human being. Evidently, you are too busy to read my faith journey. It is boring to read about people of color who are excited about Unitarian Universalism, just like you. You don't care about us unless we can help fix your problems. That's called privilege. Why don't you write your own stories of white guilt? What about your desperate desire to find a nice friend of color who acts and thinks like you and say nothing about your privilege to make you feel good about yourself? Dig in until it hurts, and you risk your jobs and your relationships and your spiritual home. It would be transformative and would definitely awaken your fellow white Unitarian Universalists. Apparently, you are incapable because the problems are invisible to you, and you're so used to having others bear the burden for you anyway. That's called privilege. Don't look around. I am talking to you and your friends in Unitarian Universalist churches around the country, not about the bigots in another church around the corner from yours. So here are my words, since you have asked, and I want you to remember that I would rather speak to you in love. But you are so used to judging other people, despite the fact that you accuse others for being judgmental. So perhaps you only awaken to harsh words. Both are my truth anyway. Painful, raw emotions and powerful desire to be loving and accepting. A typical struggle of persons of color drawn to Unitarian Universalism. My Black friend once told me that something was wrong with her because no matter how much she tried, she felt uncomfortable in her Unitarian Universalist church. And your privilege shielded you from such a struggle. Would you like me to be your friend? Oh, wait, I don't count because I am not a person of color to you. You really mean a Black person. You just made me invisible. But you think you included me into your circle of privilege, despite my cute accent and flat nose. And I should be grateful for that intentional inclusivity. That's called privilege. You say Unitarian Universalism teaches us to be tolerant, but you accuse other people and each other all the time for their beliefs or behaviors without examining your own. You say multiculturalism would make a lot of people uncomfortable in our church, but what about us minorities who have been feeling uncomfortable for a very long time? You say multiculturalism would make our budget problems worse, but then why our budget problems have been bad with almost no minorities present? You're always right and good because you are a good Unitarian Universalist, but others are wrong, and some Unitarian Universalists are not really good either. Christians are bad, but for some reason, Black Christians are okay because it looks good for us to hang out with them. That's called privilege. You hired me for my classical piano skills, and the first thing you told me was to learn American folk music from the 60s and 70s, because everyone here except me knew and loved the music. You told me I needed to learn American history because it is relevant to you, but you only asked me where I am from and what I think of a new Japanese restaurant in town. You told me not to play organ music because that would remind you of your old churches. You also told me we should sing more gospel music to attract Black people. It never crossed your mind that perhaps they didn't want to be reminded of their old churches. You want to hire Black musicians with classical music training and expect them to perform gospel music because of their skin color. That's called privilege. You say that white families don't want their children to be the minority in schools, but you say that it is good for Black children to be the minority in schools. You say that Black people are too busy, so you have to help their children. You never question that you know better than they do. That's called privilege. You probably wish I should shut up and just be a good professional and do my work without bringing my personal agendas. But remember, you wanted someone to risk everything to tell you your problems so you can be better. I do wish I knew how to rhyme, then I could rap my rant because that is the only way I feel I could express my raw emotions. But Alice, you think rap is bad music, and Asians don't own hip-hop anyway. So I hope my rant has helped you a lot. What? I don't really understand what it's like to live with privilege. Sure I do. I once had the same privilege as a Japanese born and living in Japan, and as revolutionary as I felt about myself, I would have been really angry had anyone pointed out the fact to me.
Thank you for sharing that. Yes, applause from everyone on The View. That was real. that was real and truth. And you know, one of the things we're learning, Chandra, you said earlier, this is a pivotal moment in our nation. It's also a pivotal moment in our faith in Unitarian Universalism, that we are being challenged, our whole faith, to decenter whiteness, right? And that makes the white folks uncomfortable, and that's okay. Like those of us who are white, who swim in that privilege every day, we have to hear that truth and feel what it's like to share the center. And I guess that's really what this whole project at its heart is about.
Yeah, in a sense, actually, it was good that we didn't go out and just whine and then ask the people, white people, to fix themselves, because that's centering whiteness. You know, I think celebrating who we are, how we got here, and how we left. In fact, the funny thing is, the Skinner House said, perhaps we have to find somebody who left the church. And then by the time we parted ways and I went back to contact the contributors, several people have already left the church. And Chandra doesn't go to her UU church anymore. So we... by chance, we ended up in featuring some people who don't go to UU church anymore.
I do want to interject, and this was actually a question that Terry had, but I'll just say it here just to kind of clarify. I did not leave my UU church because of any personal issue. I left, well, you know, just to make a long story short, I was actually attending both the UMC, the United Methodist Church, and the UU Church at the same time. That's where I was theologically for a while. But once I perceived a calling into ministry, I felt the universe guiding me towards ordination in the UMC. Initially, I thought it would be ordination in the UU Church, but the signs that I was getting from the universe were kind of pointing me towards a different direction. So at that time, I resigned because I thought it would be kind of awkward to explain to the UMC Board of Ordination why I was a member of the UU Church. So that was the only reason, just practical purposes. But I will always have a spot in my heart for Unitarian Universalism. So I did want to say that I didn't leave under duress or, you know, anything of that nature. And from time to time, I still am involved in activities at my local UU church. I may lead workshops or, you know, go to events that they sponsor, et cetera, et cetera. So,
you know, I wanted to ask Mike, you know, Yuri said in her rant that she wishes she could rap her rant. And you are a hip hop artist and a rapper, perhaps. I'm not sure, but I'm just curious what your response to Yuri's, I thought, very poetic rant, as she's calling it. Just curious what your perspective is.
It's just a hobby I picked out in the lobby. honestly, it's based upon the way I even learned how to speak, period. The part of the story talks about me not being able to speak at all until about age 5. And I went through multiple series of tests, from my hearing to, you know, recognition of speech. They even thought that I had autism spectrum disorder. Now, in the 80s, they didn't know anything really about that as much as they do now. And I was almost falsely diagnosed as that. And then, you know, my mother throughout my young childhood was just like, no, my son is not going to school on a short bus. We will find a way out to learn. He just has to learn slightly differently, and that's what we're going to do. So instead of reading a book to me, it would read a book in cadences. It would sound like a song. My first poem was, you know, the alphabet. You know, it wasn't the song. It was actually them going like in 80s rap beatboxing, going A, B, C, D, E, F, G. H I J K L M N O P Q R S T U V W X Y Z. And there was something about the rhythm in that that had me rhythmically write any and everything. Like, that's how I did my schoolwork. That's just a part of me. I didn't know that it was even called hip hop until me studying it a little bit more and finding that this is actually a musical genre. I thought this was just a way to learn. So I've done multiple workshops at my UU church about hip hop and how that can be used as a learning tool. And yes, it's a creative way to explain, certain paths of thought in a way that can be alluring for a lot of people, because sometimes the truth is tough medicine. Sometimes we got to have it, you know, look like a pound cake for the kids to eat it. So if we make it sweet enough, if we put a beat to it and it comes as music, then in the middle of bobbing your head, you're like, what did this guy say? And you start reading into what this person said and saying, wow, he really has quite an intuitive mindset. And I thought of, you know, that this was just something to listen to on the way to work or home or just to relax. But this is actually a lot of truth in there. There's a ministry in that. I do my own hip hop shows. All of them speak very, very exclusively about me as a Unitarian Universalist. And I think that's another thing too. Yes, these stories need to be heard. The problem is a lot of Unitarian Universalists are quiet. They're very introverted. And for me, being someone that's really out there, really extroverted, really wanting to speak that voice, I think that might even become the evolution of UUism or even a new UU, where we are all really more than just standing on the side of love and having our Moral Monday marches, but reaching out to other churches, reaching out to different communities and saying, hey, I'm proud of being a Unitarian Universalist, and here is why.
Michael, I applaud what you say just now. I remember one comment that I wrote down one comment you made. Sometimes the truth is tough medicine. So in repeating that back to you, I hope you receive this in love. But we do have to be sensitive to people who are disabled or differently abled. And I say this as a mother of an autistic son. He's never ridden a short bus. Okay. So, you know, we want people to be sensitive to issues of gender, issues of sexuality, issues of, you know, race, ethnicity. We have to be sensitive as human beings to people who are differently abled. And I know you probably didn't necessarily mean anything by it, but though, you know, that can potentially be hurtful, you know. So, again, just speaking as a mother of a son who has been diagnosed with autism. So I hope you receive the statement in love.
Indeed I do. And that's actually part of the point of how it's immediate, these things, even whether it's color or gender, is immediately interpreted in a way that is not how it's supposed to have been either intended at all. Immediately a person who thinks of someone who has autism spectrum disorder, oh, they must be in this particular category. And they're not. They're actually, again, that color of brilliance that should be very apparent. And I hope that there will be many more people who are inspired by either this book or the conversations that happen because the universe allowed us to come together to have this conversation, like a tsunami around the world. And somebody feels that wave and says, I'm going to catch on to that. I have something to say too. The standing ovation starts with the first hand clap. The very first.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Yuri. Thank you, Chandra. I hope we can learn to be color brilliant and neuro brilliant and gender brilliant and sexuality brilliant. So please do buy the book, people. Some of our viewers have already purchased the book while we've been talking. So your book is flying off the shelves, and we hope that everyone enjoys reading it. Next week, we have Megan Henry, who is a member of the Liberal Religious Educators Association board. And Megan has a particular portfolio working with what they call good offices. And the UU Ministers Association also has good officers. And we're going to be talking about how ministers and religious educators might productively address the power imbalances that exist in our congregations between those two roles. Megan and the Lareda folks have some really good ideas to share. about that. So we're going to get into some power dynamics within our congregations next week. And until then, this has been The View, and it's been my pleasure to be here. Have a great week.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.